And welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
And this is Douglas.
And Damien seems to be without us today. Or we're without him. I don't know how to say English anymore. But anyways, moving on. This week, we have with us someone who I've been trying to get on the podcast for, I don't know how long. It must be over
it's
2 months. But I'm so happy to have him with us tonight. Mel Valentin. Valentin. It's Valentin, right? Or Valentine?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. No, yeah, there's no E at the end.
There's no E then. It just feels kind of odd to say Valentin.
Yes, that's actually as accurate as you can get. Yes.
Oh, thank you. He writes for eFilm Critic and sfstation.net, is that correct? And anywhere else you'd like to pimp out that I don't know?
Well, it's eFilmCritic.com and sfstation.com. And I also wrote for Movie Vault for a while, but I haven't written for them in ages. But so yeah, those were the three main sites. I'm a senior editor and writer for eFilm Critic and sfstation. I think I have more than 1,000 reviews in my name. I lost count. There was a point where I was keeping track. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting close to 1,000 reviews. And once I got past 1,000, I stopped counting. It's like, okay, there's really no more point to keeping track of
Yes, and that's why I'm so happy to have you on today. Because today we're going to be talking about the classic 1960 film from Billy Wilder, The Apartment.
Terrific film, which I just revisited.
Thanks to Damien nagging and cheating, because I'm sure he's the one who voted on the poll to get that one first.
At least 5 times.
At least 5 times.
Sure.
And somehow he hacked my site to get rid of Lemon Tree. I was trying to get that movie in, but didn't work. Anyways, I like to start out with what we watched this week. And Mel, why don't you tell us, what did you watch this week worth mentioning?
Oh, that's always a good question. Worth mentioning, or I could go with the first part. The worth mentioning part, maybe not so much.
Well, what did you watch this week?
Well, outside of The Apartment, not much, because it's a short week for us here in the States. And that means that often movies aren't screened Monday through Wednesday, so they're screened the previous week. So unfortunately, I didn't catch Ninja Assassin, which for whatever odd reason I really wanted to see last week. So last week I saw Blindside, and yeah, I'm not sure I want to talk about that one. Blindside, of course, New Moon, Everybody's Fine, which doesn't come out until a week from Friday, the 4th of December. And that's sort of that's all I've seen so far in the last couple weeks.
Everybody's
and then,
Fine,
of course, The Apartment.
Is that the one with Robert De Niro and Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, it's Robert De Niro, Sam Rockwell, Kate Beckinsale, Drew Barrymore. You know, they all play his kids, and none of them look alike or look like him. So that was on the disappointing side. Yeah, that was sort of I think they were really pushing it as Robert De Niro, serious dramatic role. But I think the performances were great, but the material just wasn't up to the performances. So
okay. I hear you.
And I think it's based on an Italian film, which I'm kind of curious to see whether it's any better at some of the interactions between the characters. Too much of it was very obvious, and, I'm not a big fan of movies that spell everything out and have the big, climactic scene where everyone has to express all their feelings and everything that's been on their minds for 2 hours because, the audience couldn't figure it out for themselves. So, but everyone was good, And the other minus is that it was shot on high definition video, and it looks it. They didn't do a very good job covering the fact that they were doing it on DV. So there are a lot of shots and scenes where you get the whiteout effect and the blurring, the motion blurring as characters are moving across the screen.
Yeah.
So it makes it look a little cheaper than it probably was. So. And I was actually surprised that looked like a DV film from 5-6 years ago instead of something that's been done recently.
Nice. Anything else you'd like to mention?
No, that's it. I'm seeing Avatar December 10th. I'm hoping anyway, yes.
We'll move past that. We'll try to not show our jealousy.
We might get it. I saw a tweet just today saying that it's supposed to be coming out in all marketplaces
18th, yes.
Whenever it was, sorry.
you have to remember that. Whenever they send out these tweets, they forget to put in the middle all marketplaces in America.
Yeah.
Right. Well, no, I thought Avatar was ever doing day and date, which is essentially all the entire world.
Well, yeah, I think it will come out on the day here because they're heavily advertising it here.
They've been doing so for like 3 months now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen trailers in 3D and 2D. Any movie you go to, you will see an Avatar trailer.
Right, right. Well, they did that in August, the 18 minutes or 16 minutes of footage, which I ended up watching twice in 3D as well. So yeah, it's been a really big marketing push, and they're releasing all the featurettes. I'm not a big fan of releasing too much information about a movie. I realize they want that big opening weekend, and they're hoping for the best, and given the hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in Avatar. But it seems that sometimes they do too much. They give away too much initially.
Yeah, I guess they can do that. Speaking of... yeah, but Avatar, I really want to watch it, but I haven't seen too much because all I've seen are the trailers. They didn't release that Avatar Day stuff here.
Yeah, but there's been, I know recently, so
I ignore them all.
Yeah, no, online you can find like the 10 featurettes, and they had the embedded trailer,
actually,
the interactive trailer that just came out a few days ago as well.
Yeah,
that would sort of springboard off into the featurettes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are really doing a lot of background stuff.
Yeah.
I think part of their concern is since this is a completely new film, it's not tied to a book series, TV, it's not a remake, it's not a reboot, it's all new, that I think it's so rare for big studios to do that these days that they're really concerned that audiences aren't going to be super excited to see it opening weekend and through the first week or two. I don't think they're going to have a problem with that. I think that the novelty alone will give them the big opening weekend.
That's true. They've got the 3D factor plus, weird blue people. So I think they'll do okay. People tend to...
Yeah, and honestly, seeing it on a big screen, the trailer doesn't do it justice. When you see it on a big screen, when you see it with 3D glasses, I was actually really, really impressed by the motion capture stuff. Heads and shoulders above anything that Zemeckis has done.
Oh, okay.
And the characters move fluidly, the facial expressions... The dead eye effect isn't there, so it's. I think that alone is going to be. I think it's not revolutionary as everyone was talking about, but evolutionary. I think it's a better word, better description for it.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry we got off on a tangent about Avatar, but.
No, I just let you go there. Yeah, I watched a good amount of films this week. Today I sat down for the first time and I watched this German film that we've spoken about, Cabaret. And Mel, before you answer, I know it's not German. It's a joke from a while back.
Oh, okay. Well, but the setting is in Germany. Yeah.
The setting is in Germany. What happened was a while back we were talking about foreign films and I mentioned Cabaret and I assumed it was a German film because it was set in Germany. It was written by Germans and directed by a German, I think. And I just thought it was not even the Liza Minnelli version. I thought there was apparently one before it, which was a German production. But I guess I was wrong, I sat down and I watched it today. And I wasn't that impressed, to tell the truth.
No?
No, I mean, I'm a huge fan of musicals. I adore them. I listen to them.
I was going
to
ask you if you were or not, because some people have a bias against them.
No.
That's fine. Right.
I love them. I watched it. I could, if I would, I'd watch them all day long. But the thing about this movie for me, it felt really just out there. And what struck me, the only things I liked were like the really famous songs that everyone knows, like Life is a Cabaret.
Right.
Like those songs were really good. And some of the performances were really awesome. But otherwise, I think... It's one of those musicals in which they try to pack this story. I mean, we've watched a lot of war films, right? And
that's a nice segue.
I'm coming to... It's all about the story. We watch a lot of war films, which is about the Nazis being defeated eventually.
Right.
However, this is one of the few which starts in the 1930s. So it's dealing in Germany with the Nazis coming up to take control of Germany. And that's an interesting angle to look at the story from. However, you never really see that. You just see, like, a hint here of a Jew being beaten up, a hint there of them seeing Nazi propaganda and stuff. And it's just trying to deal with these three people, really. And it doesn't work out. And to tell you the truth, that master of ceremonies freaked me out.
Was he the same one that was dancing with her in the song I liked?
Joel Grey, yeah, he won an Oscar for that, I believe.
Okay. We're going to have to put a pause here for 1 second.
Don't. You can just keep talking.
Okay. Seems odd. Douglas has just left the room for some reason. What else did I see this week worth talking about? I sat down and I watched The Ultimate Cut of Watchmen on Blu-ray.
Wow. Okay. That's one that I haven't even thought of delving into or even purchasing, to be honest.
It's the first time I'm visiting this film in any shape or form since I saw it in the theater. I loved it in the theater. I am a fan of the comic book, so I could see where it went a little different in the film, and I never faulted it for it. I think that this film could possibly be the best adaptation of the year. And Damien is with us!
He has returned!
So Watchmen Ultimate Cut. I sat down and I watched it this week. This is possibly the best investment of what could be $35 for the Blu-ray package. It is an awesome cut of this film.
You know what, though? I'm upset. Because when I bought it, I was under the impression that I got the Ultimate Cut and the Director's Cut and a digital copy of the theatrical release. However, it seems that I don't have the Director's Cut on the disc.
So it's just the Ultimate Cut with the snippets in between the cartoon.
Yeah.
I don't want that one.
Well, it's that one, plus I get the theatrical, but it's only a digital copy. So that's kind of annoying. But I was willing to take that if I got the Director's Cut as well.
No, I didn't. I only want the Director's
Cut. I still haven't watched the Director's Cut. I've only seen the Ultimate and the Theatrical. And
right, and I have seen both, and I thought the Director's Cut, added some more flavor to it. They extended a lot of scenes. I didn't really feel it added very much to it. I mean, it's just more of a deepening of the experience for the viewer.
Yeah, and I still agree with the Theatrical Cut, saying that, you know, for those people who are not diehard fans, who just want to go and see the movie, they will love the Theatrical Cut as they did.
But they didn't.
They didn't?
Or they didn't, right.
It turns out that those people who just wanted to see what the Watchmen were about turned out that most of those people ended up not liking the movie. So they should have just put out the Director's Cut in the beginning and skip all of this madness. We'd have all been happy. All the Watchmen fans would have been happy and everybody else. No one cares about those people.
I actually feel I like the... As I said, I haven't seen the Director's Cut. I think the Ultimate Cut is better than the Director's Cut. I was afraid that the Black Freighter would kind of mix things up.
Sorry. Just one...
I did say Ultimate Cut better than Director's Cut a while ago,
Did you mean that?
No, I didn't. Okay. I meant better than theatrical. Sorry. Slip of the tongue. I did feel going into it that the Black Freighter could have messed it up, but I did like how it was put into the film. I liked how it was cut in between certain scenes and over the film. I think it worked best. And my favorite addition to this movie, and you can tell me if it's in the Director's Cut or not, is the addition of Hollis Mason's, when they kill Hollis Mason.
I was just saying,
that's in the Director's.
That's pretty much the best thing that they've added, and I think the most significant element that they added from the theatrical to the Director's Cut was his death and then the flashback sequence. He's dying and the fighting.
Mm-hmm. That was a really awesome scene.
Yeah.
You like beating?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was ready to see Watchmen with an extra half hour or so reintegrated back into it. I have some neighbors who have a massive big screen TV, so every time I look out my window, I see what they're watching. And they're really big fans of The Watchmen. It's like every Friday or Saturday night, look out the window, and they're watching it again. So I could just sit there. I'm like, okay, I'll just watch it with them.
Okay, then. And I guess that's all I really watched this week. Douglas, what did you see?
Right, well, for me, I didn't watch the Watchmen disc, even though I bought it, because, well, I have this funny thing called work. So I can't devote, 4.5 hours just willy-nilly like that. What did I watch this week? I watched Thirst, which is a really good vampire movie, a Korean movie made by a director that we've talked about on this podcast before. What's his name again? Park
Chan-wook.
Yeah, right. He did Sympathy for Both Mr. and Mrs. Vengeance. He's also done Old Boy, another film that I saw recently and loved. And Thirst was really good. It wasn't quite the vampire movie that maybe you'd think of. You know, it's not a bunch of, oh, we're going to go out and, you know, eat
so
people.
It's not Twilight.
No, there is no sparkling. There is no Twilight here at all.
Have you seen the new Twilight?
No, not yet.
It came out today. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, we're going to watch it. But this is more, all right. To tell you the truth, why we're going to watch it is more, or at least I don't know about this guy.
It's because you don't have sense.
No. It's because I get to make fun of one of these twihard people that are coming with us, apparently. So I will not really watch the movie, I just watch her reactions and laugh.
But didn't you
and
do
point.
That already? Haven't we gone down that
road? No, actually, I made the foolish error and watched the original one on DVD by myself. So I haven't gotten to make fun of
people. So it just made
yet.
You cry is all.
Exactly. Alright, so what else did I watch? I watched The Squid and the Whale, which is a really good movie by the director of a movie we're going to talk about later because he's got a new trailer out, Noah Baumbach. It stars lots of people.
Yes.
Why can't I remember his name? The guy from Dumb and Dumber who has wowed me ever since into realizing
Daniels, right.
Jeff Daniels, thank you. That he's not just a funny man, but he can do real acting.
Is it Catherine Keener who plays the wife?
Not sure on that.
I thought it was Laura Linney, wasn't it?
Oh, Laura Linney,
sorry.
Right.
Yeah, it's probably Laura Linney. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg is one of the kids.
Right, Eisenberg is one, and the other is a young child actor that I have no clue what his name is. But that's a really, really good movie. Of course, you know, shaking your head at me, Damien. Don't
Douglas,
do that.
Douglas, you're talking about a quirky indie comedy. Damien isn't allowed to like those movies.
I forget. Okay. So I guess, you know, I'm just wrapped it all up into a ball for you guys. So on to the next movie. I saw Precious this week.
Was it good?
Okay, well, here's the thing about Precious.
Alright, so that's a no.
Well, is it, the thing about this...
Why isn't it good?
You have to remember, I'm the guy that didn't like Crash, alright? So...
No, that's because it's bad.
Alright, okay.
It's not
right,
your
alone
fault.
Not like
Crash is nonsense.
What's that, sorry?
I said, you're not alone in not liking Crash, right?
Thank you.
No, I didn't care for it either. It's, again, one of those super obvious message movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you see, the thing about it is that's exactly what I saw this movie as being at first, before I actually watched it. When I saw the trailers, I was like, okay, this thing is just going to slap me in the face with a bunch of, maybe not cliches, but just, you know, I'm going to see a lot of abuse, a lot of bad things happen, and it's going to be like, and no, this is how you should not treat your child, which is what I assumed it was going to be. And it kind of was that for a while. Actually, it didn't dwell as much on the relationship between the mother and the daughter, which is what I thought it would do. Yeah. It was more just everything from the daughter's point of view, whether it be, you know, her relationship with her mother or how she actually finally found somebody who would help her in this teacher, Miss Blue Rain, whose favorite color is purple. color away from a Prince album. I don't want to say that this was a bad movie because it wasn't, but I didn't really like it.
No.
It was technically a very good movie, and it has its points that, you know, people will love. And I guess it's just because I'm not into that type of film.
What about Monique's performance?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Don't even get... she wasn't bad, but come on. Oscars? Seriously? No, shut up.
Well, I would agree with you up until that very last scene.
Yeah.
You know, before then, I thought, well, the way her character's written, the way she's asked to perform it, the way she performs it, is really broad. It's practically a caricature. You know, I think any character who basically plays, you know, any actor who plays a villain, is playing it broadly. F this, F that. You know, it can be really engaging to watch on the screen, but is it really something that's award worthy? But then I thought that last scene, and I think the strength of the film, and I'm one of those people who actually maybe is in the minority. Because it seems people either loved or hated it, and I really had conflicted feelings about Precious, and it took me a long time to even, you know, try to sort through them. And I think part of it was that maybe technically, you know, there were some rough edges in the way it was shot. You know, mm-hmm. Some of the elements I didn't feel really worked well. The plausibility aspect of it, I think, just, you know, that last element that they added in the third act, it, you know, it just, that seemed like too much to me. You know, it's like, we're already with her, we don't need you know, to throw in one more thing to add to the sympathy or the pity level with her.
Yeah, I really didn't like that either.
but then, you know, that last speech, that last monologue was probably the best thing in the film, was Monique's speech. And I think she really handled all the emotional range in that. And that's what surprised me. I was actually really surprised that she could pull that off. Because before that, I was with everyone who said, oh, it's not Academy worthy. But after that scene, I said, maybe yes. And I did like that it didn't come up with all these pat answers. I was really expecting that by the end of the film, you know. And it sort of reached toward that, but it didn't quite go there. And I actually liked where it left the character. And I'm trying not to talk too much about where it actually ends up.
Yeah, and I think you're doing a stellar job, because I could not have been as vague as you are right now.
You have to play the pronoun game.
Yes. No, but actually, you know what? You're quite right. She did extremely well in that last scene. I'm still not sure if I would award it to her, but yeah, sure. Maybe she deserves a nomination.
I'd actually want to give it to Precious over Monique, the nomination.
Anyway, we...
Wow.
No, I'm sorry. Precious was Precious. She was a young girl that was being abused and didn't really, you know, have anything else to offer than that.
My only real complaint of that film, other than, as you said, you know, the pulling on strings kind of stuff, was the fantasy scenes. Like, they felt really out of place. I know why they were there, and it works for the story's sake, but the way they were placed into the film just felt really odd when you're watching it.
Yeah, like, they were a bit jarring.
Like, you're like, okay, she's being raped, and she's going to think about butterflies now. And it just...
And everyone knows that. I've been raped a lot of people, I can't...
We'll give you 10 minutes before we call the police.
Oh, and we had fun at watching Precious the first time, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did. Oh, but one last thing I want to say
the
about
first
Precious,
time?
Though. Yeah, the first time. Just trust me, we'll have a nice story. Andrew can tell it. He'll deal with that. But I just wanted to say one more thing, is that a lot of the press talks about how awful, like how bad these things are that happen to Precious, and yes, they are bad, but I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit desensitized, but I thought that when you watch the movie, you don't actually feel as like outraged, or you know, you don't feel that these situations that she's put in is that it doesn't hit you as much. It's not that jarring as I thought it would have been based on what I saw online and otherwise. So that was a bit of a disappointment, actually. I wanted to see all of these ridiculous things I never got to. But anyway, Andrew, you have a story to tell.
Oh, you want me to tell it?
Yes, tell the story about how we tried to watch Precious on Friday night.
So,
Friday, right?
We went on Saturday first.
Saturday, okay. Sorry. My bad. Been drinking.
We went on Saturday to sit down and watch Precious. The theater was packed, as you would imagine, with a movie attached with Tyler Perry's name.
And Monique.
Mm-hmm. And Oprah Winfrey, who, by the way, is no longer on TV after 2011.
Really?
Yeah, she's going to start her new station.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, she has her own channel, and yeah. So she's retiring from her daytime job.
That she is.
I'm so sad. Men all over the world weep that they can't watch football on a Sunday again.
I can't deal with the sarcasm. I'm not. I don't care.
Football on Sunday. Oh, thank you.
Right, so we were going to watch Precious. Theater was packed.
Of course.
People were making noise, whatever. It was a trailer, so we didn't give a damn. But Douglas noticed something a little closer to the front of the theater happening, but we were just like, whatever. It was trailers, people were just getting situated. And then the movie was starting. The lights had dimmed, everything was going on, but something was still going on near the front of the theater. There were these three women outside of the... out in the aisle, walking where you would walk down to your seats, and there was apparently this man in one seat, and they were fighting over the seat for the movie. Ooh. So for 3 minutes throughout the movie, there was enough noise going on with these four people near the front of the theater fighting, which eventually became physical.
Of course. This being Jamaica.
Wow.
And all the people around them telling them to shut up, sit down, and let us watch the movie. after around 3 to 5 minutes of this going on, the lights turn on, the movie is turned off, and the manager, as well as a police officer, because there's a police station not 1 minute walk away from the theater, coming down the aisle to talk to these people. Apparently the woman has been cut or whatever, and she's not leaving. The manager is attempting to talk her into doing so. I don't know, I wasn't close enough, but after around 10 to 15 minutes of this craziness going on and people in the theater begging, shouting for refunds, like the entire theater clamoring all together, refund, refund,
again, this
refund.
Yeah, it got to the point where we actually got a refund, which generally doesn't
without
happen.
Question. We didn't even have to argue, right? After around 10 to 15 minutes of this going on, and people being unsure of whether they should get up and give up their seat to try and argue with the manager to try and get a refund or stay and see if they're going to watch a movie, they decided to start the movie. But they weren't going to restart the movie. They were going to continue from the 5 minute point that they had reached, since no one had heard or seen the first 5 minutes. So that's when I got up and told Douglas, it's your decision. If you want to stay, I am going. And then we walked out. I said hello to the manager and I had cash in my hand 2 seconds later. Then we came back the night after, Sunday night, to actually watch the movie. It was less than half packed because it was a Sunday. And as I made the comment in the theater with Douglas, when he was saying, how are there so few people? I'm like, they went to church once already today. They don't need a second.
True.
I actually spoke to the manager before the movie because I saw him outside the theater room, and I realized it was the same manager working the night after, and I asked him what the hell was going on. Like, because as I said, I was not that close to the actual situation. And he was like, well, I wasn't there, you know, but I was like, all right, well, you must have gotten a story at least. And I was like, yeah, well, these three women came to see the movie, and the three women picked a seat and decided all three were to leave and go and do something and come back to get their seat.
Without actually telling anybody.
They don't leave nobody there to hold the seat for them. So the three of them come back to get them seat, and there's a man sitting in one of the three seats. And they're like, hey, we want our seats. Man wouldn't get up. Eventually, fight begins. So on and so forth. The story as it goes.
Wow, wow.
And that is why we watched Precious twice, basically.
Wow.
Well, I've had some negative experiences, but I'm lucky, and I do consider myself very lucky that going to press screenings, there's often security there. People realize it's a free screening. I mean, some people still make a fuss. One of the issues that always comes up is when they have people check in their cell phones. You know, they'll either tell us beforehand, "Don't bring your cell phone," or they'll check them in, and that can get kind of chaotic. And I think it was actually last week, right before New Moon, a woman slipped her cell phone in and then turned it on before the movie started. Security saw her. Apparently she'd been drinking, so she made a fuss. And then, I mean, I was pretty far away, but it was sort of the same thing where I'm hearing this commotion. You know, it's already 15 minutes past the time where the movie's supposed to start. People are starting to get antsy. It's like, hey, get going. And she started accusing the security guard of touching her. And then the movie started. They just started the movie, and she's still standing in the aisle. And eventually she left, and her friends left, too. And I don't know what happened. I mean, I thought they were going to call the police and escort her out because, you know, it's their rules. It's when it's a free screening, you know, they make the rules, and if you don't follow them, they can ask you to leave.
Yeah. I mean, this
some
is
people don't think that. Some people think, hey, it's my cell phone. I don't want to check it in.
I mean,
and they'll just keep insisting on the same thing. It's mine, and so.
Well, I mean, I'm the kind of person that if I were to go to a screening like that, I would turn off my phone, put it in my pocket, and just not say anything to anyone.
Which is usually what I do. especially if I, you know, I see them come, you know, when I walk in and they're, you know, 100 feet away, I'm like, I'll slip into the restroom and do that. And if you turn it off more often, you'll be fine. You know, put in your backpack or wherever. Because otherwise, after the movie's over, you're going to have to wait 10, 15 minutes, if not longer, to get your phone back.
Yeah.
You know, and if you just want to leave, it's, you know, it can get really chaotic. And in some cases, I have to write my reviews and send them in the same night, like I had to do for New Moon, because they're due Wednesday night for one of the sites I write for. So regardless of when the screening happens, I have to write it and submit it, so I have to get home quickly. And that's just something I don't want to have to depend on, is, you know, security guard finding my cell phone among hundreds of phones. So, and I know, you know, some people have more expensive phones, and they don't feel comfortable with that.
I'm sorry to break you, but Aaron Desh in the chat room is saying Stellar Reviews, who's on Twitter, went to New Moon, and a police officer came in asking for some girl. Apparently, some teenage girl had run away from home to see New Moon.
Of course.
As you know, the odd thing is, last year when I saw Twilight, and I really had no clue what kind of impact it had, what readership it had with young women, teenage girls, or tweens, or whatever they're called. And I was sitting in a theater, and I realized, you know, it's press screening. Wow, the ratio of men to women is something like 100-1. And the men are pretty much press. And the women aren't women, they're teenage girls. And when that movie started, the screaming, the yelling, it went on for a good 40 minutes. The phrase blood-curdling, that's, I experienced that firsthand. Because hearing these girls screaming, it's like, I thought they were being hurt, you know? And they wouldn't stop. Every time, you know, the Pattinson or the Lautner guys came on screen, it was just yelling and screaming. And wow. Although this time, the weird thing was, yeah, it was still mostly female, but it was an older women. The screening I went to for New Moon was still predominantly female.
Well,
and so they cheered at first, but then they calmed down.
A year changes a lot.
going back to Precious, when the trailer for Twilight came on, when we were first time we went to see Precious, the women went crazy in the theater. They were shrieking like in insanity whenever Edward or Jacob came on screen.
It's unbelievable. It really, really is. And it's just so amazing. And I mean, you know, obviously, men, young boys have had Star Wars and other movies and Harry Potter and whatever, you know, so we can't really complain. But to see that phenomenon from sort of the other side, where you're not invested in it emotionally, or, you know, in any way, shape, or form, I was like, wow, they're actually kind of crazy, aren't they? You know? And you're like, okay, I guess that's how I've been with certain movies, certain genres, and franchises, so I can't really complain, but wow, there it is.
You see,
Of course, they made sure to, you know, I one of the things that cracked me up about New Moon, first time you see Robert Pattinson, you know, walking on the screen, it's in slow motion. You know, they find gratuitous reasons for them to get shirtless, you know? I think another critic said that they should have retitled the movie Shirtless. That's really what should have been called.
Starring, you know, Matthew McConaughey.
Not quite, Andrew.
Not quite.
You guys aren't really giving me any incentive to watch this movie, are you?
You see, I would agree with you, Mel, in the fact that, yes, let's let them have their fun. However, with those movies that we watch and we enjoy and men go fan crazy over, 90% of those men will admit to it that the movie is not that great, but they love it anyways.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Andrew,
I'll say, well, yeah, okay. There's some fanboys out there who still insist that Phantom Menace is a good film and highly underrated. I've met them, you know, and I was probably one of them before. I was one of the people who waited in line. You know, I wasn't doing the review thing, but when Phantom Menace came out, and
thank you,
midnight show, took the day off from work, waited in line for hours with other people who were dressed up. I didn't dress up, you know. I was super excited, and you know, by the end of it, I was completely deflated. So at least I still had some expectations and quality, and they just weren't met. But I had people walk out of there who seemed to blind themselves to any of the film's faults. They just didn't want to see it because they'd been waiting so long to see more Star Wars that they honestly didn't care about the quality of the film. You know?
All right, I admit defeat here. Moving on. Is there anything else you saw this week you want to talk about?
Not really on the film side. I just wanted to make a mention of a new show that I've been watching because, you know, my parents were telling me, this show is really great. It's called Modern Family. And
so when I make suggestions, no one listens.
No.
In the sense. Right. So
we watched The Apartment,
Anyway, I'm caught up, right? I'm caught up to the first 8 episodes now. And essentially what the show is The Office, mm-hmm. without The Office, mm-hmm. at home. That's it. Except it doesn't have all the, like,
the funny.
It's not as quirky or as funny as The Office.
It's The Office minus the funny.
Right.
At home.
Exactly. The best show so far has been the most recent episode, which is the one where Elizabeth Banks co-stars in.
Yes. I have to watch it now.
Yes. She talks about her baboons. But what actually surprised me about that episode is because I knew about Elizabeth Banks, so I watched it and I said, yes, I'm going to see Elizabeth Banks in this show. But I was surprised to see that there was also Edward Norton. Haha, yes. With a quasi-Australian accent, who was supposed to be a part of a dying 80s band.
You realize I stopped listening at Edward Norton, right?
So they have found a way around being actually funny.
Yes, they did.
Putting in...
Exactly, just
good
putting somebody.
To distract you away from the fact that it's not really that good.
Exactly, because the first, I think it's 7 episodes. I think this is the 8th episode now. The first 7 episodes were essentially the people who are a part of the show. So there is... Al Bundy, I can't remember his real name.
We all know who Al
Bundy. Ed Harris, is that his name?
No.
No, Ed O'Neill.
No, that is not Ed Harris. What?
Ed Harris is the actor who's in Deep Abyss.
He's Al Bundy.
His name is Al Bundy. He was in Poltergeist.
What?
Wasn't he in Poltergeist?
No.
Ed Harris?
I'm mixing them up now. I've had bear. Let's move on.
What are you two talking about?
Did I mention this bear is 7.9%?
Yes, it actually, if you drink it long enough, it tastes like a mixed drink. It's weird, but I like it. And I'm going to blame all of my mess ups on this bear. Anyway, this show is it's average, fair to average. Generally. However, the last episode I did kind of like. But it's because, of course, of the actors that they brought in.
I'm thinking of Coach.
Yes, you are. Yeah. You are. He was in Poltergeist.
You're right. All right, just making sure that I have... Damien, what did you watch this week?
Well, because you won't open Google Docs to get to see what I actually watched this week. Kind of strange.
What have you watched this week? I'm sure you watched Thirst.
Sure. No, actually.
You did?
I saw Thirst last week.
Oh,
didn't talk about
okay.
it because I fell asleep. I was very tired. Don't remember much of that movie at all. Reading hurts me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not that. I'm here to talk about Funny People.
Oh, isn't that a great film?
No, not really.
Oh, no. Oh.
You guys are assholes.
It's funny.
And I realized this when I saw the trailer. I realized that Apatow took a misstep with this movie. Because he could have made the movie great, and he chose not to. It was a choice.
Was there... Okay, before you say anything, was there a turning point in the film?
No, not really.
Oh, no, so it's just bad all around?
No, it's not that it's a bad movie. It's that there is... He did a special for Funny People on Comedy Central called Funny People Live, where it's just bits of all the stand-up that they did when they were making the movie. It's about an hour long, so 50 minutes long with commercial. And that is phenomenal.
So my question to you, why did you bother watching that?
If those were the outtakes, I was expecting that the movie would have phenomenal jokes. But they decided to tell some horseshit story in this movie. It was terrible. I mean... Look, the acting, Adam Sandler's in this movie, so we knew what was going to go down. He's not that terrific an actor.
He has a very limited range.
Right. It had to hinge, if you're going to call the movie Funny People, it had to hinge on the movie being really funny. And it just wasn't. A lot of the movie wasn't that funny. Douglas, you're hurting my feelings. Truly are.
So, what did you think of Adam Sandler in his other films, like
Wedding Singer?
No.
Happy Gilmore.
And, fun film,
Big Daddy, and what's it? 51st Days. Like, there's movies that he's in that I like.
Like Punch Drunk Love. What do you think of his acting in that film? In that film,
I will kill you if you say you don't like this movie.
No, I don't have a problem with Punch Drunk Love.
There is no I don't have a problem with Punch Drunk Love. I think Punch Drunk Love is one of the greatest movies ever made. That's what there is right there.
And I think you're a cool kid.
Wow, one of the greatest movies ever made.
It's an exaggeration, but I think it's a really, really good movie.
No, the movie is good, but he's asking about Sandler's performance, which I think is just a more subdued, because he always plays a jackass in most of his movies. I think it's like two movies that I've seen him in that no, he hasn't been on.
You see, the thing about this, Sandler is either a jackass or a really sweet guy in his film.
Right, and he's that subdued
and
guy, but it's not
problem,
showing.
So you know
and he always has what, sorry?
Oh, he always has a temper problem, so you know he's going to have some, you know, there's always going to be some scene with him losing his temper uncontrollably,
right.
And they try to, you know, drain, you know, get some humor out of that. Oh,
that's
the movie that where he looked like Bob Dylan, Rain Over Me.
Rain Over Me.
Yeah, that was another attempt at that.
Right,
yeah,
Rain
yeah, yeah.
The one with Don Cheadle. I actually like
that movie.
Why?
I didn't care for that one at all.
Me either. Thank you, Mel. I found
Shadow of the Colossus was part of my bias.
True. but I think, like many other films, this is one which I had no expectations walking
like
in.
And
it turned out to be okay.
The movie wasn't great. But
Don Cheadle.
Like
what the hell? Why do people like Don Cheadle?
We've had that discussion already.
Again, so
move on.
Relax.
Move on.
So funny people. Yeah, the story was not good. Told a story about some guy who was super rich, who thought he was going to die, and tried to turn his life around. Except he's been an asshole for so long, it was impossible. Right? That's the long and short of the story. But
yeah, and Judd Apatow took 2.5 hours.
Right,
to
it took him 2.5 hours, and the movie really wasn't that funny. It really, like the scene with the doctor, genius, absolute genius.
Which scene is this, remember?
When he went into the. To the doctor's
yeah,
room.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
That is genius. But I saw that
I like
scene already from the Comedy Central special. And even, what's the guy's name? Aziz?
Yeah, yeah, it's Randy.
Yeah.
Just call him Randy.
Randy. In the outtakes that they did for Comedy Central special, he they had about
that
10 minutes
funny.
Of him. He destroyed...
On a side note, did you read that he and one of his partners just
right.
got three films
yep.
through Judd Apatow?
Yeah. That's hopefully they're funny. But I saw the trailer and I knew where this movie was going. I was just hoping for the best because I saw the Comedy Central special. This movie is just disappointing. Apatow is better than this. I'm sure of it.
Well,
he's done better movies than this.
He's done
you
three films
sad.
So far, right?
Yeah, it's
this,
just
40-year-old
and
not version.
Right,
yeah.
And those two are far better films.
I don't know about 40 Year Old Virgin. I love Knocked Up, and I'll give you miles ahead. Knocked Up is miles ahead of this movie, but 40 Year Old Virgin, I don't know. I've been revisiting it lately, and I think it's better
than
what
I originally said. I'm not the biggest fan of
40
Year Old Virgin, but that movie is better than this movie.
I'm actually on the other end. I think Funny People is his best movie.
You're
Shut
high.
Up.
I'm on the side of Funny People should have been called Unfunny People.
Whoa.
And you do realize that this well, it was basically his vanity project.
Exactly.
He had done so well with all the films that he'd written, directed, or produced, and the studio said, hey, here's a blank check. And $70 million later, I mean,
this is
comedy drama costing $70 million, you know, he apparently shot like a ton of extra footage that didn't make it into the
right.
film.
He did
or the special features. So
of...
I got the sense that he really didn't have a clear focus what he wanted to do. And it's just one of the, you know, sort of one of these old-time filmmakers where the studio gives them carte blanche to do what they want, and then they're going to make it up as they go along and hope that something comes out of it that's halfway decent. And I just felt like there were, you know, two different movies struggling to emerge, and neither one of them was strong enough. And, you know, of course, casting his wife is another issue. I think she's actually fine. I don't have an issue with her. I think she actually has some good comic timing. But she was in the film, you know, for a significantly long period of time. And that was sort of unexpected, and that also felt like, oh, here's more self-indulgent Apatow.
Yeah.
Like, hey, isn't my wife beautiful and brilliant and great? So let me put her in for half the film. So,
yeah, that's true.
The
actually,
back end of
I wonder why he always in
the recession.
In his movie,
the recession.
He's got his wife and his children.
The recession
yeah.
because he can.
And the kids were cute. The kids were cute, and they actually were fine.
Yeah, they were.
You know? But
by the
but
way,
yeah, there's a.
I'm talking about the children.
Oh, the cat
song is
apparently,
awesome.
It
was
are
her.
Are you sure that it was
I'm
her?
I'm sure. I have
because
the soundtrack.
Because if it was her, then that
and
is
it's
fantastic.
Her. It's her.
Okay.
It's that was awesome.
He has a young
yeah,
something
wasn't
going down there. I don't know.
Again, the name of the movie is Funny People.
Yeah, but no.
Not that funny.
You have
all
to
right.
recognize the movies. The cat scene was
fair enough.
Phenomenal.
But
for,
it belonged
okay.
into another movie. Not this one.
All right. Okay, so let's continue. What else did you watch this week? Come on.
I finally saw State of Play.
State of Play.
What do you think?
Russell Crowe and Affleck.
What do you think?
I enjoyed the movie.
Thank you.
No. There's a difference between enjoy and think it's really, really awesome.
The story was good. I'll give Pro that.
Pro? Why would you give Pro that?
That's Pro. Damn it, man. Stop laughing.
Mirren.
No. Actors have nothing
no,
to do with the story.
Stop
their
actor's name. Scott?
Ridley Scott?
No, who directed State of Play? Wasn't it Scott?
Yeah, you have to give me a second.
Was it Ridley Scott?
I think it was.
I don't think it wasn't Ridley Scott. It was Kevin MacDonald.
Alright, whoever the hell the guy was, right.
However, Kevin MacDonald, again, story, no. You're talking about a man named Tony Gilroy. Who wrote it?
The same guy who directed King of Scotland.
Whoever wrote the story, I like the story. And this movie helps helps me to defend Ben Affleck a bit more, because, you know, people keep giving him shit. And
but
I don't think it's really necessary.
Though.
No, I don't.
You see, the thing is, Ben Affleck has redeemed himself behind the camera. Yes, I'll give you that. He was not awful in this movie. He was pretty decent. He did his job. But how many other times has he not?
No. Jersey Girl.
Jersey Girl, he was decent. What else?
There's the Gus Van Sant movie I love.
What else? That's three movies.
I liked him in Hollywood Land, a bad movie, but he was good in it.
Okay, I haven't watched that one, so I don't know.
I have some others in my arsenal.
Changing Lanes?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't really like that movie that much.
I thought he was good in that. I thought he actually gave a more expressive performance than he had in a while.
Chasing Amy,
and maybe,
my favorite
that was the
Kevin
direction
Smith
that
movie.
Sort of pushed him.
You know,
I also get the sense with him that he's a bit of a lazy writer, you know? I mean, a lazy writer, lazy actor.
Uh-huh.
That he shows up on set, barely knows his lines, you know, just stands wherever he has to stand, utters the lines, and then walks away. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember reading it about Daredevil that he just kept talking about what a great experience it was.
Uh-huh.
But he was talking about, like, all the non-shooting stuff, you know, like, oh, what a great family, what a great experience afterward, you know, we drank so much, and like, well, it shows, you know, that you guys were partying after the day was done, but you weren't putting together a good film.
Right.
Continuing on.
Although he did meet his future wife there, so I guess true.
Yeah, this is true. I'm sure he had a lot of fun on that set.
Continuing on the defense of Ben Affleck, I know you're going to say I didn't like this movie, but I did like him in Dazed and Confused.
Oh, Alright.
God damn it.
no, he's been.
You had to bring Linklater into this.
And also, just as I mentioned, because I never knew this, but IMDb is showing me he was in an episode of Buffy.
That does not matter. actually,
so back
that
to
may actually
cut
be
off
a
Douglas
bad
right here.
Thing.
Back to State of Play. I did enjoy the movie. The dynamic between
really
Pro and MacAdams, I thought it was a bit off.
It's a lot.
Listen, it doesn't matter how off any relationship is. If MacAdams is in it, it's on, okay?
Wow, Douglas. Thank you for showing us that you're better than the Twilight people.
I never said I was better than them.
You're a sad little man. You're a sad little world.
Anyways, what were you saying, David?
Right. I definitely enjoyed the end of that movie. It's one of the few movies that I've seen recently that I couldn't tell what was going to happen in the end. I had an idea, but I was off, and I enjoy when that happens. I understand why the movie didn't make all the money. Because this movie really doesn't appeal to... I don't see this movie appealing to that many people. But it was a good movie. And I took... after watching this and seeing Ben Affleck act, I listened to my two other co-hosts' suggestion and went back and saw the Daredevil director's cut.
Wait, no. No, stop.
That was me.
Stop.
That was me alone.
There is no two, there is one.
Okay. And Andrew, you're going to hell for lying. That movie doesn't get any better the longer it gets. I must tell you. Ben Affleck is terrible in that movie. In fact, that movie is terrible in that movie. There's nothing... I mean, whoever thought that movie was a good idea...
I'm sure it was fabulous.
The truth, though, that movie is a good idea.
No.
However,
No, it's not.
The execution of that movie was not good.
I actually don't see where a better Daredevil movie could have been
made. No, my Daredevil, it has No.
Favreau was good in it, though. I'll give him that.
So what you're saying...
Favreau was in that movie?
Yeah, he was
so long that I've seen
it. You don't need to go back.
He was Daredevil's assistant lawyer.
Oh, yeah, he was the friend lawyer. Right. Like,
so you're saying what you're saying is you're waiting for the Jason Statham version.
No, I'm just saying that I really don't think they could have... Let some things just don't translate. Unless they were going to strip away all that made Daredevil Daredevil and make it into like Ninja Assassin 2.
No, actually, Daredevil gets really gritty sometimes. It depends on who writes it. You know, of course, early on,
right, but
they had to tell the origin story. Yeah.
And if they're going to do it again, of course they're going to tell the origin story again.
For example, look at Superman. Hulk is the best example right now.
They told the origin story in the opening credits. It's genius.
And you know what I find funny? I listened to the commentary on the DVD for that, and Lettier was talking about how the first cut of the film didn't have that opening credits. And he only threw it in at the last minute because people were confused in all the test screenings as to whether it was a sequel or not. And he eventually just said, here, 1 minute version, catch you up to speed.
Just relax it, you silly bastards.
Because apparently nobody knows how the Hulk was made.
Yeah, so Daredevil isn't good, Andrew. I don't know what you saw, you thought you saw, because it was on film.
Okay.
Is it the Jennifer Garner chick? Was it she? I don't know.
There were some fun additions to the director's cut.
Like what?
Like, for example, I remember there was this drunk driving scene where he pretends to be drunk and he's... Like, that was a fun scene. And there were some...
Ben Affleck?
Yeah, Ben Affleck.
So Ben Affleck drove?
Yes.
Remember, he has bat vision.
I'm sorry.
He was scaring somebody.
Listen, if he moves at speeds at which car moves, he... is able to actually use his bat vision, as you say, and see far enough to be able to drive.
This is where you're suspending belief. Here. Really, Douglas? Are we seriously going down this road?
Maybe I shouldn't. You're right.
I think I should stop. You're one of those people that saw Up and Went, and after he flew the balloons over the canyon, he went, those dogs are talking. Are you one of those people?
Wait, what? Squirrel? You're saying dogs can't talk?
No, I'm saying, are you one of those people that complained when the dogs were talking?
No, I thought that was true to life.
You see, herein lies the thing. I think the honest part about it is that the original version of Daredevil was so bad that when someone said to me, watch the director's cut, it's better, I agreed with them that it was better.
But they're lying. Because
That's the story I heard. I remember hearing what you heard, which was, it was good. Isn't that what you heard?
Yes, that's what I heard. I didn't hear that it was better.
I was saying that it was an okay version, and it was astounding. Whatever.
Andrew, prolong.
Whatever.
If you
moving on. Moving on. Moving on. Anything else you saw this week, Damon?
Sorry, man. This is how we get.
No. And I'm no fan of Daredevil, and I think I have the director's cut lying around somewhere, and every time I think of watching it, I think twice, and I don't.
I would tell you, if you have 2 hours to burn, watch it just to look at it.
And I'm telling you, you don't need to.
And I'm telling you from absolutely no experience that Damon is right.
So this week I wanted to watch what is undoubtedly my favorite movie of the year.
Which is?
2012. But 2012. I spoke to Andrew and asked Andrew if our lovely theater
said this last week
was going to show it properly, and Andrew said no. So they have some shitty version showing at the theater.
Unfortunately.
I like Roland Emmerich. Maybe I should watch one movie he's made that I haven't seen.
Which is?
And it was a mistake.
Which one was that? 10,000 BC?
That's probably his worst film. That's the second worst. Godzilla is probably still his worst.
He did Godzilla too?
Yes. I love Godzilla.
Why?
Godzilla? Because I saw it as a child and that was awesome.
Okay. I pat you on your...
I haven't seen it since, and I have no intention of going back.
For some reason,
to keep that lovely image of that movie in my head until I'm dead.
For some reason, whenever I think of that Godzilla film, I always see the Puff Daddy video.
Tell me, old man, what did you see? It's genius.
Anyways, 10,000 BC.
Renault Jean, was it a movie?
Jean Renault.
Whatever.
Apparently, it's backwards names day today.
And he's also.
Was he in 10,000 BC?
No,
or?
That movie is so bad.
He should have been. Been.
Oh my goodness. Like, it's clear that he saw Apocalypto and went, I'm going to take this one step further. And he did take it further. But it wasn't necessary. And the story doesn't make any sense. Clearly he was taking his history cues from the Flintstones, because he believes that dinosaurs and men wore the earth at the same time. The movie's just bad. Oh my god, that movie's bad. And I mean, as one of his bigger fans, or probably one of his only fans, he was really disappointed to them, because I like Day After Tomorrow. I like Day After Tomorrow.
He likes seeing the world end.
Independence Day.
Okay, no, I'm with you on that one. I like that one too.
I remember liking it.
Independence Day is probably the high point, I think, of what he's done so far.
And I hear that, like, there's this interview where he came out and said he's going to stop doing the disaster movies because there's nothing else for him to blow.
And then
I'm
he did 2012.
I'm like, 2012 must be the greatest movie of all time. If he blew up everything he could blow up,
right,
then that
tell
movie
you the
must
truth,
be phenomenal.
Right? When I saw that movie, I thought, listen, I thought this movie was going to be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't horrible. It was actually okay. So I'm sure that translates
into
you.
Phenomenal.
You see, whatever you think, I always remember us going to see the Day the Earth Stood Still in the theater last year before Damien made his pact. And laughing at, because Damien loves disaster.
Yeah,
he loves seeing the world end for some reason.
Because
and I will
fun.
Tell you, I will tell you from first hand knowledge, you must, I'm sure you're going to love 2012.
No dog. I remember telling everybody about this movie when I saw the teaser, when the wave came over, like, I don't even remember what mountain it was, and killed some monk. I'm like, what? But of course, Carib. Being care.
Anything else you saw this week?
I don't remember because
okay.
Google Docs. I was going to argue with you about your 10 worst parents. You did some.
I
posts.
Did that. Yeah.
Right. And
was there something I left out?
There was about 3 people that you left off. 3 people that I'd argue with that you left off. And there's one person that is there that I see on all these lists whenever they come up. That I don't agree with and won't ever. Dark Vader, really? Worst parent. He didn't raise the guy. How is he? He's his
he
father, quoting
for him, right?
But that's. How is he a bad parent if he didn't raise the child? It doesn't make any sense. What's wrong with you?
When I made that list, I did cheat for Darth Vader, and I thought it was more of a comical pick because I used the argument for Empire Strikes Back when he chops off Luke's hand and
right.
tells him I'm your father, and you see that reaction from Luke, like that just felt like a bad thing, and I just laugh at it. And yeah, I know it's probably you're probably cheating and
bad
you
person.
Could disqualify it if you take it too seriously, but yeah,
if you're going down that road, then like Chucky is the worst parent of all time, because didn't he have children like 9 movies later?
I think so.
Actually have not seen a Chucky film.
Oh, you're not missing anything.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, maybe 20 years ago we were young and stiff, you have gone, but no. Those movies, I'm sure, don't hold up. Outside of,
so who is it you wanted to add into the list or argue for?
Cannot remember.
Can't remember.
Can't remember. I'll have to do this another time.
And just as a mention, I would like to say that I probably would put Monique from Precious in the top 3 of that list after watching Precious.
There was the parents in Welcome to the Dollhouse. They were absolutely.
I totally forgot
she
about
ran
that movie
away to New York, and no one noticed.
Well, there's the father in Happiness, same director.
Actually, I haven't seen that one. Baker. I've heard crazy things about that movie, but I haven't seen it.
You know, after seeing that movie, I've never felt more repulsed by the director, what he was doing. I understood what his points were, but after that, I never wanted to see another movie he would make again. And it's rare that I feel that way, but I honestly, you know, I mean, okay, so he's humanizing a pedophile, I get it, you know, but there's some scenes in that that really, it's really hard to sit through. And it, I mean, it leaves you wondering how he could get into that character, into that character's head and present him in quite that way, but... On the other hand, that's what a great writer or director is supposed to do, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess.
But you also had a character who's like masturbating against a wall. You know, I mean, everyone is just so, you know, sexually screwed up. You know, and it's just not the pedophile characters. Like, everybody in the film has serious sexual problems, you know, hang-ups, dysfunctions, you know. So, sitting through 2 hours of that. I mean, you know, it's called happiness, but it's supposed to be ironic. And it really is. So I highly recommend it. You should rent it the next chance you get.
I'll probably look into it soon.
No, you
won't. Damien knows that.
I saw someone said we should put Homer Simpson on the list. He's like the worst pirate of all time.
How is he not killed back yet with the amount of time to strangle him?
It's like South Park and Kenny. They just bring him back every episode.
Alright, so outside of that, still, no, I haven't seen anything. But it's almost December, so that means all the series that you bastards are watching now are winding up.
Oh no, Chuck is just starting.
First of all, I'll never watch Chuck, because it took you, what, 250 hours to decide whether you liked it or not. So the answer is no. But all the good series, sorry.
No, you should check out Chuck. If you have a chance, check it out.
See, Mel agrees with me. Chuck is awesome.
It's okay to be wrong sometimes. You can't be right all the time. It's impossible.
Anyways, moving on into news.
Yay, news.
Starting off this week, every week we end up talking about some random sequels that we will complain about and whatever. So I'm just going to make this jump this into something called more sequel nonsense. Apparently they want to do a sequel to Zombieland.
Shh, in 3D. I don't want to hear that.
Thank you, Sony.
Have you seen Zombieland yet, Damon? Right, so...
Stunning. It is beautiful.
The director is saying that he thinks the 3D technology is there. And as much as I love 3D, I haven't seen anything live action 3D. And I think... Like, I'm very much weird to see... Like, how I see digital 3D now... I don't think it would work with live action, but I'm willing to open my mind.
But Cameron has fixed the technology.
Cameron fixed the technology. Fox came out and said it didn't cost them $500 million after all.
So Mel, I'm sure
maybe it cost them $499.
It cost them $600.
Yeah. Mel, I'm sure you've seen Zombieland. How pumped are you to see it again, part 2 in 3D?
Well, I'm all for it. Why not? I'm more than willing to give it a shot, especially since it's a horror comedy. You know, so you're going to have limbs flying at the camera. It's probably going to get very, very silly. You know, so it's going to be massive amounts of gore. Throw it at the camera. Make it, you know, make the audience jump out of their seats. I think it could be fun. Why not?
Zombie kills of the week in 3D.
Yes, yeah, in 3D. Why not? And you know, and the whole series was actually supposed to be a TV series. The whole story behind it is that it was written as a pilot for a series, which kind of explains how it ends. And then they rewrote it as a film when I guess I'm not sure if it was actually going to be network television. Yeah. So you can imagine. I mean, you can't do much more than PG on network TV.
Wow.
So I mean for an HBO or Showtime, you know, another one of those channels where you can do R-rated violence, but. Originally, it wasn't going to have that at all, and then I guess it was rejected as a pilot, and then they rewrote it as a film, and you know, that's what we ended up getting.
I wonder.
So it really does feel almost like a part one.
So they just pad 20 extra minutes and said, "Here's a film."
I think the writer said the film, the first 45 minutes was essentially their pilot, and then they rewrote the second half, and they took bits and pieces from other episodes that they've written.
That's the reason the Zombie Kills of the Week thing is inside the movie, because they wrote it as a series.
Oh, so they'd probably have,
so
like
one per episode.
Oh, that totally would have worked. I did think the Zombie Kill of the Week was kind of odd for the film.
That's how that came into the film. And they had written it with a lot of different cameos. So the Bill Murray one wasn't the first one that they wrote.
Yeah, actually,
spoiler.
Apparently, I remember reading that Patrick Swayze was supposed
to
be the original.
Yes, correct.
And they had one for Jean-Claude Van Damme and also
JCVD. Oh. But now that I think about it, you know, if this was a show on like HBO or Showtime where they could do crazy rated R shit, I would totally want that.
But even the PG-13 stuff, sometimes it could be done well.
Yeah, and they just would not have, like, the gore wouldn't be in your face.
Yeah, I love the gore in that film.
You know, they're supposed to be doing Walking Dead for AMC. Frank Darabont has been developing that. I haven't heard anything recently about it. But, you know, the AMC is basic cable, so I'm not sure how far they're going to push the violence or if it's going to be one of those shows that they only show at 10 or 10:30. But if you've read the comic book it's based on, it's incredibly gory.
Yeah.
Well,
that's something to look out for, I guess.
I'd watch Walking Dead. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And AMC has made Mad Men, which is an awesome TV show. So it's not like they're not willing to give people.
They also had that other show, though. What was it called? Something about Con Men. You know what?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name.
No, it's on like some relegated British TV channel, which is how badly it did.
Anyway, still in more sequel nonsense. Apparently, Stephen King is working on, or has been working on, The Shining Part 2.
So all we have to do is hope he dies before he finishes it. We'll be good.
But why not? Look, wait. Let's take an example, okay?
S. Darko.
Right.
The Godfather had the first one, and then the second one about 10 years later.
Was it? No.
No.
No, it was like 2 years later.
It wasn't 2 years. It was like...
No, the third one was like...
The third one was like 20 years later. Yeah, but no.
Godfather 1 was 74, if I'm not mistaken. 2 was 76. And 3
was
90.
72-74.
72-74?
Right, it was 2 years apart. Not,
yeah, they
I told
were
you this all night, Douglas.
What are you talking about?
You made a different argument to me, Andrew, damn it.
Yeah, see, IMDb says Godfather 1 is 72, Part 2 is 74.
Good luck with that, sir.
And
but either way,
sorry.
How can you not?
Because it's The Shining. Do
Why
you want a thing part
a
2?
We got Donnie Darko part 2, which
I
still haven't watched and I refuse to.
Well,
but
Richard Kelly didn't have anything to do with
it. Plus,
nobody that
the
originated
one.
It had nothing to do with it. Steven Spielberg, jeez.
King. King.
Stephen King. is writing.
How did
so it's clearly the originator that Stephen.
How did Ghostbusters
to
work out for your son?
Okay, you're probably going to hate me for this, but actually, like,
you're going
Ghostbusters.
To
actually, like Ghostbusters too. That is the first one that I remember.
Son Emmerich says he's
I remember watching
to
Ghostbusters
2
before I watched
Ghostbusters
answers. 1.
Why? And The Shining, really, he'd wreck everyone.
But how do you know he's going to wreck
because
it?
Because it's 100 years later and he's probably
so
senile
what?
By this point.
He's senile. Doesn't he have a new book that's coming out called Under the Dome that's automatically gone to being a Steven Spielberg produced film and it hasn't even come out properly yet?
Look at Spielberg.
Oh, no, it's just come out. I have a copy.
Oh, it's out? Oh, sorry.
It's out here. It's a doorstop. It's massive. I'm not sure when exactly I'm going to start reading it because I think it's over 1,000 pages long. And I think they're going to pick it up or they're talking about a miniseries, which is probably what it's better suited.
Yeah.
Than trying to condense it into a 2-hour film. I think that was the problem they did also with, even though they did it, that was adapted for TV, I think that was just like a 3-parter.
Oh yeah,
I don't think that really captured the book very well because 800-900 page novel, really spent a lot of time with a lot of different characters and most of that got thrown out, so. But yeah, the description I read of what the, you know, a Shining sequel would be sounded like it could be promising. You know, catching up with the Danny character at, you know, his 40s and what he's doing and the abilities he has and how he's developed them and sort of the traumas he's still carrying around from, you know, his father basically losing it. So I think it has potential. I mean, who knows? It also didn't sound like he'd actually started writing it yet. So he might not never get to it.
And we hope he never does.
What are you talking about, we, white man?
I'm talking about the royal we.
We people who have sense we. Doesn't want to see.
Moving on through news. Apparently J.J. Abrams is now attached to produce the Samurai Jack movie, and it's not sure whether it's going to be animated or live action or anything, but I just felt this was worth a mention. Because this was a cartoon back when I was still in the in-between stages of watching Cartoon Network cartoons.
So last year.
And I did enjoy this show.
Me too. Because I'm a child.
Yeah, it was a fun little show, but is there really enough material there for a film?
You're talking about the man who brought us the new Star Trek Cloverfield
material.
So I don't care.
Demons.
He just needs to make up his own shit, and then we'll watch this movie.
All he needs is to have the ninja chop demons. I don't. It must be easy to write a story around it. Can't be that hard.
I don't know if you saw any of this, Douglas. Did you watch Samurai Jack? And
I watched pieces of it. I watched a few episodes, and I always remember liking it and wanting to watch more, but never actually watching more. So I've seen maybe one or two episodes.
Back in the good old days of Cartoon Network.
When Dexter was on. Oh man, Dexter's Lab, that was the greatest cartoon.
Courage the Cowardly Dog is...
Well, I wasn't...
That one was good. That one was good.
Of all time.
Yeah.
Mel, any thoughts on this other than, wow, where is the material?
Not right now. Yeah, I guess I'd have to hear more from him. I mean, I'm not one of those people who loves Abrams so much that they're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
As much as
I like Star Trek, it had some pretty massive story flaws. You know, I mean, the effects were fantastic. They're some of the best that we've seen in a long time. I think especially all the action out of space sequences were really amazingly well done. But, you know, couldn't they have worked a little bit longer on the script? I really just felt like there were holes that they could have patched up, that they could have fixed. And you have the brain trust, you know, the two writers, Orson Kurtzman and Lindelof from Lost as the producer, who is also involved in the writing, and Abrams. And all these guys are supposed to be great writers. And still, there were massive plot holes and the way they you know, had to cram together all the characters so that they would, you know, be part of a crew at the end. A lot of that just didn't work for me, especially in the second half. So. So I'm hoping with the next Star Trek movie that we've gotten that all out of the way, it'll be stronger story-wise.
The next time we'll see C-3PO.
What's that?
The next Star Trek we'll see C-3PO.
But we saw him already.
No, we saw R2-D2.
Sorry.
R2-D2 in the debris field, right, yes.
Yeah.
The hell are you guys talking about?
Apparently J.J. Abrams and ILM implanted R2-D2 into the new Star Trek film, and people have found it and screenshotted it all over the internet, so you can find it. And it's just funny because when J.J. Abrams was announced to do the film, everyone was like, oh, he knows nothing about Star Trek and he's a Star Wars fan kind of thing. It's just kind
of... Yeah, some of that was maybe a little... He was saying that in all the interviews, that he was a Star Wars guy, not Star Trek, that he had to get up to speed on it. And I thought some of that was kind of hyped up. I think later in another interview, he seemed to admit that, yeah, he knew a little bit more Star Trek than he was admitting, but that he was trying to keep expectations low, both from Star Trek fans and from the non-Star Trek fans, so that he could try to appeal to both sets of groups, or both groups. So I don't know how true that is or not, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's like that. Anyways, moving on. Another news item this week that Douglas is forcing me to talk about.
What?
Yes, he's forcing me to talk about it, so please do not send hate mail to me. Send it to Douglas. Apparently, The Dark Knight has been dethroned as the top opening weekend by New Moon.
I think it's the top opening day.
Yes. Opening day?
The opening day. They actually didn't get the weekend record.
It's opening day. Yeah. They made 72.2 million in the opening day, while Dark Knight only made 67.2.
Yeah. Okay.
None of us have seen New Moon.
I know it's a direct dig at me.
You're quite right.
Well, let me explain.
Mr. Dark Knight fanboy.
There are more women in the world than men. So it only made sense that when they put out a porn movie for women, that they flock to it like sheep. And so they have. And when they put out the third one, guess what? It's going to break more records. Right?
Really? So do you think next year when Inception comes out, we'll overtake them again? And
no.
Then...
Because there's more women in the world.
Well, and then there's also the argument that there aren't enough movies that cater specifically to a female audience, right?
Son, all
right.
We had Whip It this year.
And
come
that's
on.
What, you know, that's all what Titanic right. did.
Why did
ago.
Titanic make $100 trillion? Not because we were going to watch it again. Have nothing to do with
it. Oh, I never want to see it again.
All those women decided, you know, this movie's phenomenal. They keep making movies like Die Hard and True Lies and all that madness. And women don't want to see that, by and large. And whenever they put out something that is directly geared to them, they go out and watch it. The Sex and the City movie made hundreds of millions of dollars. That movie was even good. I had to see that nonsense because I was dragged kicking and screaming to watch a terrible mess. And so I'm actually shocked that it didn't beat The Dark Knight. I thought this movie was going to make billions of dollars, and it probably will by the time the next movie comes out, this movie will probably have been Dark Knight's overall record. I'm not surprised.
So moving on then. Apparently Chris Weitz, who directed New Moon, which we just spoke about, he's wants to quit directing without quitting or something.
Yeah. He says he's going to retire. Except all of a sudden now he has another project to do. And then he says, well, maybe I won't.
Because he directed
all.
New Moon and thought about killing himself.
Actually,
well, that makes him a hot
found
director,
a reason to leave.
What's that, man?
It does make him a hot director again, doesn't it?
Oh, I yes, mean, it does.
After
definitely.
Golden Compass basically failing at the box office in the United States, it did much better elsewhere. I think, you know, his name was... I was actually surprised that he was attached to New Moon because of the failure of Golden Compass, but I guess the producers realized, hey, maybe we can get him cheap. He knows how to handle, you know, the big action pieces, set pieces, the effect sequences. He can do all that. You know, let's get him on New Moon. So I guess, you know, that's... His career is back on track, if that's what he wants.
Yeah,
it was
true.
It was odd that his brother, just, you know, a few weeks ago, what was it, the Cirque du Freak... Vampire's Assistant came out. That was another movie, lots of effects. It tanked. It did horribly at the box office, and I think justifiably. It wasn't a very good film at all.
Shocking.
It's weird. Actually, that was a movie that before I saw the trailer, I thought I really wanted to watch because, you know, it had various things. I'm kind of a vampire fan. It also has John C. Reilly, who I love, but then I saw the trailer and I thought, this movie looks horrible. Which was odd, but also Chris Weitz, I mean, like, I was a bit sad about the performance of The Golden Compass, because at least on the first viewing, on my first viewing, I thought it was a pretty decent movie.
Same with me.
Even the second viewing, I didn't think it held up as well as it did for the first time I saw it, but I still kind of liked it.
But wasn't that movie really expensive?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, come on, most of it was not real.
First of all, the only thing that I have to say really negative about that film is I'm shocked that it beat Pirates of the Caribbean, and I think it beat Transformers 1 in the Academy Awards for Best CGI, which I think was insane. I thought Pirates of the Caribbean would take that one without a problem.
It's probably the best of those three movies.
Yes, but in CGI.
No.
Visual effects, yeah.
Also, what I didn't know up until recently was he was the director for About a Boy, which is one of those two Grant movies that I really do enjoy.
I don't know.
And on a side note, his brother, Paul Weitz, he directed In Good Company, which I really like.
Yeah. I think when they've done smaller scale indie type films, they've done well. But then all of a sudden they've moved on to these big budget action films, and like, how did that happen? You know, there was no sort of gradual progression. It was just more of this massive jump you know, here's a $10-15 million budget. Oh, here we're going to give you $100 million. I mean, I'm just kind of shocked that the studio would see those earlier films, American Pie and About a Boy and Good Company, go, okay, sure, we're going to give you this massive budget. Go for it.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense that eventually they, after all of these smaller films that did well, did relatively well for themselves, the studios would say, hey, take a chance and hand you a bigger film. It just happened to be that they got bad ones like Twilight, which I guess made lots of money, as we mentioned, because of the fans more than him, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't think they're giving a lot of credit to Chris Weitz. And so. And I mean, if it sustains enough interest, maybe they could say, hey, it's actually drawing in more male viewers, then maybe they'll put a little bit more on that. But I would think that's already there in the scripts anyway, with having the, you know, romantic triangle and having more screen time for the Jacob character, you know, as a werewolf, the wolf bat, you know, the wolf pack running around, all of that stuff's already there.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, everyone has to get their shot. Chris got Twilight. Paul got vampires in a different form. They just happened to not work out together.
No, not at all. That's true. Moving on. Vampire films.
Moving on into our last news piece this week that we want to talk about. Apparently, they're pushing The Hangover for Best Picture. And I think this is an insane idea. Are we together in this, or...?
It's never been done.
was that really the case? Awesome. I saw the ad for Your Consideration. I'm like, consideration for what? Are you serious? I mean,
for Best Picture.
I know that sort of... A lot of films do that don't even seem to have, you know, any kind of reasonable chance of getting nominated for anything. But it sounded like it was... Someone was serious when they bought the ad for it, right? The studio was serious. And especially now with those 10 films nominated every year. I mean, sometimes there aren't even five that are worth nominating.
And that's what I'm thinking right now.
A couple, and now, like, and I think it's obviously going to make it much harder to take a reasonable guess as to what film's going to win as well. I mean, like last year, hey, Slumdog Millionaire. You knew it had the buzz, it had all the critical acclaim, all the festival stuff. It really built up a lot of momentum extremely well. And so you really felt, okay, that's the movie that's going to win, or it has the best chance. But what's going to happen when you have 10 films all vying for the Academy Award? It could end up being a film no one is even really thinking about seriously. So, I mean, God forbid that it would be The Hangover, as much as I enjoy it. Come on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all right, I think this question is more for you than everyone here, because we don't get to see a lot of those films that are Best Picture worthy within the year that they come out, because those tend to come out within the last 3 months of the year, and Jamaica tends to get them late. So my question, or not at all. So my question to you, Mel, is: do you think there are even 10 films worth mentioning as Best Picture at this point?
Serious, man, immediately.
But you haven't seen it.
It's a Coen Brothers movie. It doesn't matter.
Oh well, I would certainly put a Serious Man and Where the Wild Things Are. They're going to make my top 10, top 5 list at the end of the year. But there's still films that I haven't seen. I mean, I live in San Francisco, and it's a major city, but a lot of the films that do, you know, that they want the studios want to push for the Oscars only come out in New York and L.A. So there's still, you know, a handful of films that are coming out that I haven't seen yet that look like they might be Oscar-worthy, or they're going to push for, I think, like we were talking about, or about to talk about, Last Station is one that actually is probably not going to get a full release here until early next year, but it's going to come out in New York and L.A., Single Man, Nine. I still haven't seen either one of those. They're coming out soon here.
Yeah.
And those have that sort of Oscar buzz, and, you know, the one's a musical, it's by the director of Chicago, won a few years ago. So it'll be interesting to see whether there're gonna be enough movies to fill out that top 10 list.
Because, I mean, I remember earlier this year when they announced that they were going to upgrade it from 5 to 10, I was all for it, because every year it seems, whenever they announce the Best Picture nominees, that it always feels like they're leaving something out. But right now,
right.
Even based on films that I'm waiting to see, that I want to see, which look like films that will be Best Picture worthy, I don't think I can name 10.
It's going to be a real stretch, yeah. Well, and I think maybe you're thinking of, like, last year, Dark Knight, not even getting a Best Picture nomination. And I honestly thought it was going to as well. But, you know, a lot of that, too, is the Academy, and I'm not sure if they're changing their voting habits or patterns. You know, most members of the Academy are older, so a movie like the Dark Knight wasn't really considered seriously by a lot of them, because it's a comic to them. It's a comic book adaptation. It doesn't matter if it's serious and explores serious themes. It's still a comic book film, so they just weren't giving it a chance at all.
Yeah, I guess. Anything you guys want to say to this news of The Hangover and the Oscars Best Picture stuff?
I mean, you're saying that you can't think of 10 movies, but we all know what's going to happen when they announce their 10.
It's going to be 6, right? And then 4 fillers or something like that?
No, you're going to be annoyed that there's good movies that still didn't make the list. Because that's what always happens. I read somewhere where people were hoping that Star Trek would get a nomination.
God, I hope not. I thoroughly enjoyed
sure,
it, but that's a travesty.
People,
come on, no, no.
These people
please.
Have forgotten who, you know, the people who works for these Oscars. It's never going to happen. The Oscar people, they're always going to pick. They're going to pick the Oscar bait movies that a lot of them we haven't seen yet, although it's December.
Yeah.
A lot of them haven't come out. And then they're going to go way off the beaten path and pad it out with some madness that you've probably never heard of, that we as moviegoers and as movie fans haven't heard of, because they can. They're doing it to pander. I just hope that they don't go out of their way to do that this year, just because last year people were bitching about The Dark Knight. I was one of them, but I understand how the Oscars work, so I hope they don't use this year and the extra 5 to put in movies like Star Trek. I don't think The Hangover.
Drag Me to Hell.
Or maybe as you're suggesting, they'll just go
like
with something really small scale that a lot
movies.
Of people haven't seen, which is still not going to have a chance of winning anything.
I guess.
But it's just there to fill out that top 10 list.
Awesome.
I mean, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you see Serious Man, Single Man, 9. I think Crazy Heart is coming out soon too. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, that's hitting late December, I think. We saw the trailer last week.
Like Moon. Do you think Moon is going to get a Best
Picture? I think Moon can get a nomination.
I don't think so.
I hope it does, because
yeah.
To tell you the truth,
we can't
I think,
on
no,
I
seriously,
think
so
in.
Far this year, I think Moon was the best movie I've seen.
It might get one for Sam Rockwell. All
right, Sam Rockwell might, but for Best Picture, I doubt it.
Like right now, my favorite picture that I've seen this year is 500 Days of Summer, but I know that's probably not going to end up in the Best Picture nominations. Or if it is, it's going to be, as you said, a padding.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a really strong film. It was, I saw it at a film festival earlier this year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Do you think Up's going to get a nomination?
I think Up will get a nomination.
I don't think it's
it going to win.
I don't think it will win.
Padding movie.
Just like
definitely
Wall-E.
Padding.
It shouldn't win. Yeah,
yeah, that's
like
definitely padding. You're mm-hmm. putting that into.
Oh, you said, I'm sorry, you said Up?
Yeah.
Well, and then it might get nominated twice, right? Best animated film and then Best Picture.
Mm-hmm. It will win Best Animated because, I mean, it's
Pixar.
Pixar and it's almost like any film that gets nominated for Best Foreign Film and Best Picture, it's going to win Best Foreign Film. You know, it's sort of like, okay, you already nominated an award you're likely to get, we'll give you that one, and you won't even be seriously considered for the major award.
Right.
At least that seems to be the trend that I've seen over the past few years.
Well, with all these changes, maybe they'll try and break a couple of those trends. You never know. We'll see.
So, moving on.
That's the one.
Into trailers. Greenberg.
People don't call on my birthday anymore. I guess I don't call people on their birthdays. Why should they call me?
It's weird aging, right?
Youth is wasted on the young.
I'd go further. I'd go, life is wasted on people.
Hey, Greenberg, what are you doing these days?
You know, I've been in New York, but right now I'm really trying to do nothing for a while.
That's brave at our age.
Dear Starbucks, in your attempt to manufacture culture out of fast food coffee, you have been surprisingly successful for the most part. The part that isn't covered by the most part sucks.
I'm impressed by you.
In what way?
You seem really fine doing nothing. You don't feel the pressure to be successful. I mean, by other people's standards.
Damon, have you seen this trailer?
Yes.
I know Mel hasn't seen it, so I'll basically leave him out. Damon, what do you think of this trailer?
It looks like generic indie squallow. That's what it looks like to me. It looks really lame. That's it doesn't look... I've seen them make this movie a million times.
Because, I mean, we saw you... like hit your head against the table earlier when Douglas mentioned The Squid and the Whale, which is the same director.
No, it's not really, like, it just, like, I've seen this type, they make this kind of movie every single, like, at least 10 of them every year, with some guy who goes back to his hometown and is a little bit off and he finds some love interest and their adventures till the end of the movie. I've seen this movie.
And he learns to reconnect with everyone, and
right.
He learns the value of relationships and friendships. And
Didn't even see the trailer, and he knows exactly. You understand?
Okay. You're right, though. You know what, Damien, you're right. This does seem like a generic movie, but guess what? Let's forget about the director for the moment, right?
I didn't know until Andrew said it.
Noah Baumbach directed Squid and the Whale, which is a fantastic movie and which is reason enough to watch this one. But let's forget about him. Let's just say we go by the trailer. And first we see Ben Affleck. Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
First we see Ben Stiller.
Yep, the bear is done.
Of course. I like. So, you know, Ben Stiller's funny. We're okay with that. However... immediately after you see Ben Stiller, you see a man by the name of Reese Ifans. Once I see Reese Ifans, I'm sold. I don't need anything else. Reese Ifans is great. He is in a lot of minor roles of
big movies. He's in Pirate Radio.
Yes, he is in Pirate Radio. Or, as I like to call it,
The Boat That Rocked.
Probably.
The Boat That Rocked.
He is also, I think, my favorite... well, no, it's not my favorite one of his roles. My second favorite of his roles. He is the very annoying, very quirky, very awesome roommate in Notting Hill. and my favorite role is probably his role in Human Nature, which is directed by Michel Gondry. But once I see this guy in anything, I'm immediately sold. I need to watch anything that he's in.
Actually, I'm into this movie because... it just seems different than a regular Ben Stiller film.
But it seems the same as every other indie film.
And I like every other indie film. So, I mean, I'm happy to see Ben Stiller doing something other than his silly ridiculousness that he did. As much as I loved Tropic Thunder, which he did. It was last year, right? Yeah, last year. I want to see this. And I did like Squid and the Whale. I'm in.
But did you see Margot at the wedding?
I did not see Margot at the wedding.
I've seen some of it. I know people love it.
Actually, I've heard the opposite.
I really almost detested the film, and it
wow.
wasn't. And it,
where
it
have
wasn't
you heard that
even the story, that? Or it wasn't the story, or even the performances, which were uniformly excellent. I think Baumbach is married to Jennifer Jason Leigh. Margot at the wedding, and she was perfectly fine, but. He did the whole indie camera, you know, the indie shaky cam.
Yeah.
And he shook the camera in every scene. It didn't matter. He was like, you know, what is wrong with you? He had these great actors, and you couldn't even see what they were doing because he was shaking the camera. And then he underlit all the interiors, and you have a lot of scenes that are inside. And you can't, again, it's the same thing. It's like, well, this is supposed to be a reaction shot, and it's murky. You can't tell... what, you know, what's going on in the actor's mind as he or she is, you know, uttering a line. As it's almost a verbal tick that a lot of indie directors have. Oh, we have to shake the camera. Oh, we have to make it look really rough, even though he probably had more money and could have made it look much more professional. That somehow that makes your movie more special. It doesn't. It's you know, I don't know. It just seemed, okay, he's a writer. He can direct performers, but when it comes to actually having a shooting style, understanding what he needs to do with the camera, he seemed lost. And I thought he didn't do that with Squid and the Whale, which is great. And I haven't seen the trailer for this, and I'm hoping he doesn't do it here, that he got enough negative criticism that someone said, hey, stick the camera in one place, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that does annoy me sometimes with certain films. I remember, I think it was Quantum of Solace. The action in that film just kind of annoyed me with the camera work. But
Well, it becomes just, you know, incoherent.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I can understand the quick cuts, the quick editing, and, you know, moving the camera, but when it just becomes a blur of action, what's the point? What exactly are you trying to get across to the audience? And again, and if you do it within an action scene, and then you have calmer scenes, that was sort of my problem with the Bourne films, especially the second and third ones, that when you keep using that same style in every single scene, then what happens when you get to an action scene? You can't go any faster. You can't cut any faster. You can't do anything differently.
I'd like you to
save for specific types of sequences, but
I'd like to help you and me get together and write up a letter to Michael Bay about Transformers.
Transformers, Armageddon. Armageddon was hilarious at the time. I just remember seeing that in the theater. It's just a simple dialogue scene, and he's just swooping the camera around the room, around the two actors. You know, constant cutting left, right. You know, overhead shot, undershot. You're like, what are you doing? There's nothing, you know, I guess he just felt the scene is not interesting enough. The content of the scene isn't interesting enough. And so I have to do this for, you know, the full 2 hours.
Okay. The next trailer I wanted to talk about was The Last Station.
If you were to become Tolstoy's private secretary, you would be given a great gift. We have a lot to do if we are to get his work to the people.
So glad you're here!
I sneeze sometimes when I get nervous.
I believe that wealth corrupts us all.
It's a keystone of the movement.
Oh, God, I know all about the movement.
I want you to keep a diary. Anything the Countess says.
The survival of our movement depends upon it.
I cannot stand by while they steal my children's inheritance.
You all think he's Christ, don't you?
What?
He thinks he's Christ.
I have a little gift for you. It's a diary.
It's right what you see around you.
What? You see.
You've been keeping something from me.
Have I? Tolstoy does not approve of sexual relations, I know this. This would not be a problem with me. I'm a vegetarian. I am celibate.
The Countess is too interested in making a profit from your work.
You're all plotting against me in my own house!
I kind of want to file this trailer into And the Award Goes To... Because when you look at the cast of this film, it feels like they're making Oscar bait just by the lineup. You have Christopher Plummer.
Helen Mirren.
Paul Giamatti. You have the dude... James McAvoy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Like, and it's a period piece in which they are talking about some special family. I can't even get the gist. And it's a love story kind of thing. It feels right, like they're just running for an Oscar in every category.
And it seems that watching the trailer, that it wasn't really clear what the film is about.
Yeah,
you have to read
really
the description
isn't.
About it. And I don't think the trailer really conveyed. It's about Tolstoy. It's, you know, his last years. It's about the conflict in his family over money and property, because he had basically become or started his own sort of sub-branch of Christianity. And he had, you know, he was the son of a nobleman and, you know, owned a lot of property, and his family lived comfortably. And by the end of his life, he wanted to give all of it away. And so the conflict is supposed to be between him and his wife and the Paul Giamatti character, who wants him to give everything away. And his wife is saying, hey, what about me? What about our kids? You know, what about future generations? And that conflict is not necessarily clear in the trailer, which I was kind of surprised.
I'd like to thank you for explaining that. I had no idea what this movie was about. I'd like to thank you.
Oh, sure.
Damon.
And I read some Tolstoy, and I read not War and Peace, but Anna Karenina and his short stories and some of the pieces he wrote explaining his philosophy, which he meant it to be sort of the, hey, I want to go back to the roots of Christianity. It's all about compassion and charity and, you know, poverty, essentially, and, you know, living, you know, where love is the ideal and celibacy is the way you practice it as well. So that's the other interesting aspect that you don't get in the trailer, that all of a sudden he's basically become a priest, you know. His wife is like, hey, wait a second, we've been married for 50 years.
True. Damian Douglas, Damian, any thoughts?
Much like Greenberg, this looks like, it looks like they looked at the list and they said, all right, we need this. The trailer just seemed similar to all of those period pieces. And if it wasn't for the explanation that we just got, I'd have had no idea what it was that this movie was seemingly trying to say. The difference is that with period pieces, if they're done well, I'd be more inclined to watch it than the Greenberg movie. So this looks just as generic as that Greenberg movie, but because of the subject matter that they're dealing with, I'd be more inclined to watch this.
Yeah, well, you see, this trailer, the funny thing about it is, if you had inserted any actors that I didn't really think were all that great, or even actors that I just didn't play
right,
I'd probably say, no, I'm not going to watch this movie. But you've got guys like Helen Mirren and Paul Giamatti and all, you know, these kind of guys, and James McAvoy, who, even though he's been in a couple of duds, actually, I think he's good. I like him.
Other than Wanted, what other dud was he in?
Penelope.
I like that movie.
I like it.
He was in Atonement, which was awesome.
Right.
Oh.
The first 2 hours were awesome, and then the last 2 minutes were so fast.
What, you're not all fans of Atonement? What? Wait.
Well, you see, the funny thing about Atonement is we all have different views. Andrew is of the view that... Well, no, sorry. Damon is of the view that the first, say, hour
50 minutes
is unnecessary and was horrible, and then the rest of the movie is good. Okay. Andrew is of the view that even though the first 50 minutes was unnecessary, he appreciates it and then loves the rest of the movie for it. I am of the view that I love the first 50 minutes. I also love the second 50 minutes, but then that last 10 minutes or 20 minutes just completely ruined the movie for me. So we're all like, you know, it's not that this Atonement really was a bad movie. Most of it was good, but I just didn't like where they went with it. Anyway, what was I saying?
James McAvoy,
very good guy. I like him. Yeah. But anyway,
he
this trailer, as everybody has said, I really don't get what the movie is from just the trailer alone. Based on this trailer, the only reason that I want to watch this movie, or I'm even slightly interested in watching this movie, is thank you.
Because
I like the people that are involved. And that's all.
And I think you might be right that maybe they just realized there was no way they could tell the story in the 2.5 minutes, and let's just show a lot of actors that, you know, people are familiar with and can connect to their previous roles, you know, indicate that it's a period movie and just, you know, have them emote. You know, I think half the scenes are Helen Mirren being upset about something or other, you know, screaming at somebody, and then, you know, like falling down, and like, okay, that's interesting, I guess, you know.
Can I say how odd it is to see Paul Giamatti rocking the exact same look
yes.
he had in The Illusionist?
Right, yeah, what was up with that? I think he's even wearing the same...
Doesn't he even have the same accent?
He looks like he's the exact same person, and I love that movie, The Illusionist.
He didn't have to bring that. I was walking.
All right, moving on to the last trailer I wanted to talk about tonight was Remember Me.
Gandhi said that whatever you do in life will be insignificant. But it's very important that you do it.
Officer, those two were just trying to stop it.
Go home.
Hey, don't.
I tend to agree with the first part.
You could do worse than have a father who bails you out of jail.
I don't want to be bailed out of anything.
Why do you think Dad doesn't want to spend time with me?
She knows I'll take care of her. That's all there is, Tyler.
That's all there is? Not enough.
You know you can't smoke in here.
Why do you have an ashtray?
It's a bowl. It completes the room.
I guess it was just here to tease me.
And since Damien has piped up, I think I'm going to start with him.
Oh, Lord.
The new Robert Pattinson film.
Yeah, it's like Twilight without the vampires. Another love story with this dude. He needs to do something else. I can't risk. Every time I see him, that the only connection I have with this youth is the fact that he's the dude from Twilight, right?
He was in Harry Potter 4 as well.
Whatever.
He was in Harry Potter.
Yeah. One of the dudes.
He's the main guy. He's Edward.
He is the fictional character that ladies leave their boyfriends over.
Oh, I'm sorry, I fell out. If it was somebody else.
Like, Damien, why aren't you more like Edward?
If it was, it's because I'm a man. if it was, I don't know. What's the dude from 500 Days or something?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Right, it was him in the trailer. Like, if you just replaced that dude with Levitt, maybe I'd have had a better reaction. But this movie just looks like they're like, hey, we got the dude from Twilight. We're making another love story. Like baiting women into watching him in another movie. That's all it is.
The funny thing about this trailer is that I kind of agreed with you for a while. Not while I was watching the actual trailer. I kind of wrote off Pattinson. With his Harry Potter cameo, essentially, that's what it was.
I don't remember.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. He was barely in it. He didn't show whether he was a good or a bad actor. He was just kind of there. With Twilight, he didn't do much. He kind of took a Bella approach, or I thought he did, where he was very non-emotive. He kind of just, you know, had this one... I know, just one level of, feeling, and he didn't portray anymore. And maybe that was just direction. But I thought that in this trailer alone, right, he showed more than one level of emotion. He showed his happiness. He showed his sadness.
He shows that he gets dirty.
He shows that he can actually put inflections in his voice as opposed to just saying everything in one,
staring at
him. In a monotone, yeah.
So, Mel, what did you think of this trailer?
Wow. Well, I think he whoever just spoke up,
Douglas,
about the range of emotion that he showed, that almost seemed purposeful, to have him do a role that is the opposite of Edward.
Yeah.
And that he does have to show more emotion, but the feeling, the sense of the guy. I guess who's the father? Is it Pierce Brosnan?
Yes, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. I saw the trailer actually a couple of weeks ago, and I wasn't particularly impressed. The conflict between the rich father and the son, and kind of reminded me of Catcher in the Rye and Holden Caulfield, and he goes to private school and no one understands him, he's a rebel and all of that, that all just sounded really looked familiar to me, and I don't know, maybe there's more to it, and I hope there is, but
you're probably wrong.
From the trailer I didn't see much that impressed me outside of him trying to do something a little different, and I guess he should be applauded for that. I don't think he counted on when he took the Edward role that it was going to be so massive, and if he's thinking of acting as a long-term career, it's a problem because he has to try different roles and show some range and bring some of that audience over into those other roles, and that's something obviously he hasn't proven yet.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to preface what I'm about to say.
You're about to say that you love this trailer, aren't you? Aren't you?
Can I preface first?
Just fess. Fess up. What are you going to say? Good, bad?
Based on this trailer, I think this movie is going to be bad. However, with that said, I think, as you guys are saying, I was refreshed to see Pattinson do something different from Twilight and Cedric Diggory roles. And the thing about it is that I'm almost looking at this like a Zac Efron kind of story with 17 again. In that we wanted to hate Zac Efron because he was in High School Musical, but then 17 again came on and we couldn't help but think, this isn't that bad, and it's actually kind of good, and we hope that he turns... And with Mia Norris-Noel, Zac Efron looks like he can turn out to be a good actor. I don't think Robert Pattinson has that much... is showing that much range as Zac Efron is showing right now.
Wow. You should just record that and just keep playing
over and over. So that one goes in the ad.
Putting that in the ad, that's genius.
But I do think it's different, and it's something I'd watch just for that sake. I think Chris Cooper is a really good actor. I like him in films I've seen, from American Beauty all the way up to The Bourne Identity. And he was also in Jarhead, which was great.
And you like Pierce Brosnan?
Actually, I think Pierce Brosnan looks really stupid in this movie.
At least you're honest.
I mean, if it wasn't for The Matador, I'd have absolutely no respect for him right now.
Oh, he was great in The Matador.
Yeah,
he
really.
You guys didn't like James Bond?
There was GoldenEye and nothing else. But yeah, I mean, I don't think this movie is going to be anything great, but I would watch it just for the sake of seeing Pattinson do something different.
That's
so you're saying, Andrew, shut up? Okay,
Andrew,
I'll shut up.
That's really sad.
So I guess we can move on then.
Yes, I think we should.
We're gonna go into our review, which was voted on by our listeners.
Yes!
Billy Wilder's The Apartment.
So I figure a man in his position, he'll take me to El Morocco, maybe 21. Instead, he takes me to Hamburg Heaven and some schnook's apartment.
Good night. Oh, Miss Kubelik? I've been waiting for you. I almost didn't recognize you. This is the first time I've ever seen you so very close.
How'd everything go on the 27th floor?
Oh, you're great. Look, have you seen The Music Man?
No.
Would you like to?
Sure.
I thought maybe we'd get a bite to eat first, and then we go.
Oh, you mean tonight?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't. I'm meeting somebody.
Oh. You mean, like a girlfriend?
No, like a man.
I wasn't trying to be personal. It's just the fellas in the office. They were wondering about you, you know, if you ever...
You tell them now and then.
This date, is it just a date or is it something serious?
Well, it used to be serious. At least I was, but he wasn't. So now the whole thing's more or less kaput.
Oh, in that case, couldn't you...
No, I'm afraid not. I promised I'd have a drink with him. He's been calling me all week.
I understand. Well, it was, just an idea. Hate to see a theater ticket go to waste.
What time does the show go on?
8:30.
Well, I could meet you at the theater if that's all right.
All right, it's wonderful. It's Majestic on 44th Street.
I'll meet you in the lobby, okay?
Yeah.
Damien won.
Damien won. How many times did you vote, Damien?
Actually, I didn't vote. I didn't remember. I got thought of cheating and couldn't remember because I have the podcast on my RSS cache. I don't have any reason to go onto the site except to berate your whenever you put up a
new post. Sorry, you guys are breaking up a little bit there.
Oh,
we are. Is everything okay now?
That's a little bit better, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you sound fine, but the other guys sometimes break up a little bit.
So yeah, I didn't cheat. But how much was my victory? I need to know.
All right, I think
fiercely competitive.
It was a landslide.
Sounds about right. People know good movies after all.
So I think we should start out with Mel. Mel, this is a classic film. I'm sure you've seen it before. What did you think about it on this viewing?
I had seen it a couple times before. Then I revisited last night. I wanted to be fresh, and man, I was impressed all over again. You know, just everything about the film, and just sort of digging back into what Billy Wilder, he had an amazing 20-25 year run, you know, with all the movies he made, Oscars he won, nominated. I think he's probably made about four or five classic or near classic films in that short period of time, and I don't know how many directors you have, you know, you can say that about, but The Apartment, I just, you know, one of the things I hate using the word masterpiece describe any film, it tends to get overused, but then I think the word that makes a little bit more sense to me is flawless. I can't think of anything that's wrong with the film that I would change, and maybe to me as a critic, as a writer, I'm like, okay, this was wrong, this didn't work, this line of dialogue, this performance was off, and I couldn't find anything in the film. You know, it's corporate satire, you know, I mean, it sort of predates Mad Men, but I almost feel like it's an inspiration for Mad Men in the way it looks at culture and, you know, the corporate culture and the men and women and the gender relationships at the time. You know, it could be actually pretty harsh, especially for women. But the Jack Lemmon character, you know, he by all accounts, he should be a character we intensely dislike for the things that he does to get ahead. And somehow I think a lot of that is Jack Lemmon and the persona he has and the persona he brings with him and his performance. But we don't dislike him all the way through the film, even when he makes really shitty decisions, you know, where he's screwing other people over or, you know, I mean, he's complicit in the adultery and infidelity of these other characters. It's a pretty sleazy thing to do, to give up his apartment, you know, and yet he cares about this woman. And but one of the things that I really loved about the film is their relationship and sort of that subtext or the inability to be honest that runs through the whole film all the way until the ending of the film, that he can never really tell her how he feels and that painful experience that he has to go through as he's trying to sell her on someone who's not right for her. And, you know, I think near the end of the film, there's that double revelation, you know, where she finds out what's going on, and then minutes later, he finds out her relationship to Sheldrake. And it's just perfect. I think that's some of the best acting on both their parts, Shirley MacLaine and Jack Lemmon. I forget who said that, you know, acting is acting. Acting is actually reacting. And if that's the case, then especially Jack Lemmon, you know, that's, I could understand why he was nominated. He probably should have won for that role, because the expression, the range of emotion that he shows in just such a brief scene, you know, absolutely floored me. I was just really impressed. And there were little subtle things that he was doing that I hadn't noticed before seeing again. And I think the other thing that I think is really amazing that people sort of forget is that Billy Wilder wasn't American. His English was a second language or third or fourth language for him. Yet he's able to write some really fantastic dialogue. You know, when you can sort of joke about Roland Emmerich, it's like, okay, his dialogue sucks, but he's German writing in English. And his co-writer in the last couple of films is also German. And I don't know who they're bringing in to polish the script, but it's, you know, the dialogue still sometimes doesn't feel like it's English that anyone who speaks it, you know, is familiar with. But Billy Wilder just had these, you know, just reams and reams of dialogue, and, you know, that were really funny and witty and, you know, sometimes blackly comic and, you know, sly, subversive, all of that, you know, sometimes to get past the censors of the time. And I think that's even more amazing. I think he's probably one of the most underrated directors. I think as time wears on, he's been dead for a few years, and, you know, his last great film was probably in the early 60s that, you know, people tend to forget that he was really a fantastic director and a writer, you know, and he sort of fits the theory of the writer-director and, you know, the visionary, the creative artist that, you know, people always like to think about or talk about, you know, as filmmakers. So anyway, so going back to the apartment, I think it's a flawless film. You know, I definitely would give it a 10 out of 10.
I have to say I'm totally with you, Mel. I have to thank Damon for this. He always makes fun of me that I run a movie website, I have a movie podcast, but I don't watch enough older films, right? And because of him, earlier this year we did a classic film marathon. Not all of his podcasts came out, but we did enough. And we had seen Sunset Boulevard, which I loved, as well as Some Like It Hot, which I loved. And this now is the third Billy Wilder film I'm watching, The Apartment. And I almost feel like I need to go and just find everything he's directed.
You almost feel like one more push.
You should. Listen to me, Andrew. I actually found out recently that this is not the third, but the fourth Billy Wilder film that I've seen. Because remember that movie that I said, oh, there's another movie with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine that's so good? That movie is actually Irma La Duce, I don't know how to pronounce it,
yeah,
directed by
Duce,
Billy Wilder. And I thought, I prefer that movie to this one. But at the same time, this movie is fantastic. I really enjoyed this film.
And has anyone seen Double Indemnity? That was, I think, his first real...
Yeah.
I mean, he had written several other... You know, he started off as a writer and became a writer-director. And he, you know, did a few small films first and then did Double Indemnity that he co-wrote with Raymond Chandler from... the James Cain novel, and they spent, I think, the better part of a year writing, or I think 7-8 months writing and rewriting before they filmed, and then he got nominated, and then 2 years later he did The Lost Weekend, which I also recommend. Lost Weekend may not be his strong, one of his stronger films, partly because it's sort of a social issue film. It's about The Lost Weekend refers to the main characters played by Ray Milland, who won an Oscar, who's an alcoholic. So it's basically the Nicolas Cage character leaving Las Vegas,
yeah,
and following a guy who's on a self-destructive course. But then, you know, a few years later, he did Sunset Boulevard and Stalag 17, which I highly recommend if you haven't seen that either. Which was sort of in a weird way like the inspiration for Hogan's Heroes. But it's not a comedy. It's nothing like a comedy.
What are you saying was the inspiration for Hogan's Heroes?
Stalag 17, that's what I've read. And I can sort of see the the way some of the characters, if taken to the level of caricature, would become Hogan's Heroes.
I love Hogan's Heroes. That's an awesome TV show.
I did when I was a kid, too, when it was like reruns growing up.
Yeah.
Then I realized, wow, this is, I don't know what this is. But
One thing that I thought of while watching this film, two things actually. As I said, we watched Sunset Boulevard earlier this year. I remember a scene in Sunset Boulevard where the guy was talking to the girl that they fall in love with, the two of them fall in love, about a script they wanted to write. And you know, there was this one scene, I think it was a bathtub scene that you loved so much, Douglas, at the party, where they were throwing out ideas for films. And eventually, the guy says to her, make it so that the guy uses the apartment in the day, the girl uses it at night, you save on production costs. That's the immediate thought I had when this movie opened, when you had we didn't know this at the time, the boss walking out of the apartment at 8 and Jack Lemmon outside going like, hey, you need to be out at 8, I need my room and stuff. I felt it was that kind of a film until 5 minutes later when we found out that it was this whole, the boss abusing his power to
bosses
abusing their power to get him into using his apartment. I mean, it definitely was a somewhat of a two-way street in that he was getting something out of it. You see from the get-go that he's being abused throughout this. He's getting the shorter end of the stick, and eventually when we all find out about Fran and who he ends up giving the apartment to use with Fran, it's insane. The next thing I thought about was, we watch these films with actors like Michael Cera and Jesse Eisenberg playing all of these neurotic characters, but Jack Lemmon was really the guy who did the neurotic character really well back when, and I really want to go back and see more Jack Lemmon now. I remember loving him, seeing Grumpy Old Men and The Odd Couple and stuff like that, but as I said when we talked about Some Like It Hot, I never really went back to the 60s to see 60s Jack Lemmon and 50s Jack Lemmon, and wow, I love it. I don't know what I can say bad about this film.
Douglas?
Well, he did a dramatic role, Dates of Wines and Roses, a couple of years later,
mm-hmm.
Where he plays an alcoholic, actually. And he was actually very strong in that as well. So if you get a chance to see that. And then Missing, which is 1982, with I believe Sissy Spacek.
Yeah.
And it's sort of topical, political. About a sort of middle-class businessman whose son disappears in South America when there's a military coup, and he's trying to find out what happened to his son. And he sort of becomes, you know, politically aware once he runs into all of this resistance from, you know, the State Department, federal government, and, you know, there's a cover-up, etc. And he's very good as the father, who's just trying to discover all this, and, you know, ends up becoming a very different person by the end of the film, and all of it just really seems logical and natural. And I think, you know, you kind of hit on something there too with him, that yeah, he was sort of seen as a neurotic actor, that he could play that well, and maybe he wasn't given enough credit, and he did a lot of comic roles
yeah,
to be recognized very well. You know, it's like, oh, it looks easy, but it's not necessarily easy. And I think Billy Wilder and he worked multiple times together, and I think one of the reasons is because Wilder really, really liked what he brought to the film, and what he did with his you know, in filling out the characters that Wilder gave him. So I think he's an underrated director, underrated actor is how I would put both of them at this point.
Yeah, Douglas, any thoughts?
Well, not much more than what you guys have already said. I really love this movie, but I just wanted to touch on something that Mel said about the persona that Jack Lemmon brings when he plays this role. And you're absolutely right, because not until you said it a while ago, Mel, when you said, you know, there are all these crappy decisions that Lemmon's character has made, that I actually saw him in a bad light. All throughout the movie, I sided with him. I was like, oh, look at right. this guy. He's being abused by his superiors into, using his apartment for their evil deeds. And then, you know, when he, in my view, came to the aid of Fran while she had her incident, I said, oh, look at this guy. He's taking the rap for the boss when he shouldn't, all because he's being abused. Throughout the film, I because of, I guess, the persona that he brings, you know, there's some sort of likability to him that throughout it, I found reasons to say, you know, this guy is a good guy and everybody else is a bad guy. But you're absolutely right. And I think that, I don't know, there's something about that that's kind of odd, that he can portray this character that, yes, he's not all good, but all bad, but he's definitely not all good either, and still have me saying, yeah, this guy is the good guy. So I think there's something to that.
Damien?
Right, I saw this movie about 3 years ago, I think. about 3 years ago. And when I saw the movie, of course, I saw this movie by chance. I was watching, I think, Stars Encore, one of those stations. I saw the movie. And of course, the movie is a classic, so there wasn't that much to not like you watch a movie. But I didn't know the name of the movie, saw the movie. I didn't care to find out what it was. And then when I was going through IMDb's top 100, this movie was way up there. It was like 13, something like that. And when I was going down the list and watching all of them, I saw the movie. And I went, no, I've seen this one before. And I rewatched it. And outside of the fact that I really like this movie, because this movie is one of the few movies that provides me a chance to take away cynicism and sarcasm, because you guys know me, that is basically my persona to a T. And even when I try to I find myself being kind of like, I feel bad for myself when I try to do it. Because there are points in this movie, especially at the end when he makes that final decision, because he's now basically like vice president or whatever, and he decides that, you know, he's had enough, despite him reaching the top. I'm looking at myself, I'm like, if I had been put in that position, not only would I have given him the key, I'd have given him the apartment. Because the girl that he wants is in essence banging the boss, and she is doing that because he's the boss, right? She knew that he is not going to leave his wife. He said so to her before, and even after she tried to kill herself and whatnot, she still went back to this man.
Boy, really?
So the movie is 50 years old.
I haven't seen it.
You're stupid. I'm like, would I have made any of these decisions? And looking at myself, the answer is no. There's no way I'd have made the decisions that he, at the end, like the initial decisions of giving the boss the key, right? Any of us would have made that decision. And as I was progressing higher and higher, when I get to the point where I am vice president. And it's not like this guy wasn't doing any work, because he was still killing himself, despite, you know, having all the bosses promote him for essentially a key. And he got so high up. I'm like, why would you give that all up for some girl who you went out of your way to, you know, to basically take care of this girl in her darkest hour, and she still went back to the man who led her to that point? What incentive does he have? Would I have? And I wouldn't have. But that's why I love this movie. Because when I think like that, I realize that is exactly what this movie is. That is why this movie is so great. Because this movie is about what people should be able to do, not what they would do. I wouldn't have done what he did in the end, because I am a terrible person, but I know that. Right? And that's why I love this movie so much. This movie is just, outside of the acting, outside of the direction, outside of all of that, everybody knows that this movie is fantastic. Anyone who's ever seen it, it'd have to be basically Andrew to have and the reason I said it is because Andrew doesn't like Bullet, because Andrew is a cokehead.
Thank you for reminding me. What is wrong
while we're on this roll, let's remind listeners that Andrew doesn't like Rear Window as much as Disturbia.
Whatever.
This is true.
No, yeah. No. That is you being stupid about Bullet. Really? Well, this movie is like, I believe that everyone should see this movie. Like, as soon as children reach the age of reason, you should show them this. This movie is so wholesome. It's so good. Like not in terms of the movie being good. I mean, like, good as in, like, right and wrong, like, heaven and hell type of good. It's just,
are we talking about good. The apartment or Bullet? I'm
no,
confused.
That part. And like, this movie makes me want to be a better person. It's never going to happen.
No,
it isn't. No, I know I'm not lying to myself. But this movie makes me want to be a better person. And there's not that many movies that do that. Love this movie.
Thank you, Billy Wilder. You give all the citizens of Jamaica hope that Damien could become a better
yeah,
person.
Never enough. Nah.
So I guess we're all in agreement, like a 10 out of 10 for this film.
Shit.
Douglas?
And I think this
I suppose seven, I just don't like eight. Giving films 10 out of 10.
7, 8, 8.5.
You think there's always something that could be better?
Not that.
No, it's because he's one of those people that doesn't think anything is perfect. No, despite him being wrong.
10 out of. Okay.
If you're going to use. Alright, so Before and After Sunset. What are those movies?
20.
Obviously. You're going to use something to benchmark other movies. You might as well use The Apartment.
Wow, so endorsed by the Only Movie Podcast and Mel Valentine,
yes.
Watch The Apartment.
So that's how you know it's good. As a power seal of approval. There was a bit of doubt in people's mind before this.
And I guess we can wrap up there. Mel, where do you want to point people to on the internet before we go?
Again, you can just find me on eFilmCritic or SF Station, and also older reviews on MovieVault.com.
Okay. You can find the podcast on gmanreviews.com. You can find us through iTunes, the podcast alley, or using the RSS feed on the site. You can email me, andrew.robinson@gmanreviews.com. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/gmanreviews. Douglas?
Yeah, my Twitter name is DJR Lost His Name. You guys can follow me if you'd like, you know.
Damien?
I don't like sheep.
And that's really it. I'd like to thank you all for listening, and good night.
Sheeps is
right, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you again,
Mel.
I'm so late.